Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 31st of July, the last day of July, and we are thrilled that you are with us this morning. We have a lot of to talk about. There was this debate last night. We'll talk about that. There were all 10 of the candidates were in Detroit. 10 more will be there tonight, and we'll chat about what they had to say. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we have an amazing group to talk about all of this. We welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Well, hello, Joe. Thank you for putting me first today. I appreciate that, and believe me, it's unwarranted.
Well, no. I'm looking, and I think not only is it more. No, I made a mistake. I was going to say I was going alphabetical today, but then that would have put Fran first. So
yeah,
But good morning, Alan. Good to have you here. Fran Berman is with us. She is get a load of this. She is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and the Faculty Associate at the Bergman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University and the Harvard Data Science Initiative Fellow.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you? Good to have you here, Fran. Always a pleasure to have Fran with us.
Thank you.
And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here. Good morning.
Whoa. Good morning.
Very nice.
I have a much shorter intro than Fran.
You do, but
columnist.
The name speaks for itself.
You darn good.
You know, you're a writer. If you want to punch it up,
yeah,
let me know. I'd be glad to include it.
And all around awesome guy.
I'll give you a 10-minute spiel.
Bet.
Yeah.
And Berkshire Eagle reporter extraordinaire Jen Smith is with us. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning.
Wonderful to see you here. All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us get started and talk about what's happening in the world. So last night, the Democrats debated in Detroit, Michigan, and it was, I would say, I don't know if anyone on the panel will disagree with me on this, but I would say it was a very substantive debate.
It was actually like a debate, almost, in some regards.
It was, yeah.
High marks to CNN for both their sound people, and to, because we heard every word, and also just a very substantive debate where we got to know some of the candidates and what they had to say. So on the stage Tuesday, with highest polling candidates in the middle were author Marianne Williamson, Tim Ryan, Senator Amy Klobuchar, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders of the great state of Vermont, Senator Elizabeth Warren of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke, former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, former Maryland Congressman John Delaney, and Montana Governor Steve Bullock, who made his debut on the debate stage last night. And actually, I believe in the timing of what people had came in third, having the most to say.
Got some airtime.
He got some airtime. He needed it, and he got it. And so that was interesting, with both, of course, Elizabeth Edwards and Bernie Sanders being at the top of that list of getting the most airtime. And while it seems to be the headlines coming out of this is a very strong debate performance by Elizabeth Warren, who did not fight with Bernie Sanders. Those two seem to be quite simpatico. However, there were some pretty good remarks back and forth about the Democratic Party itself, what we should be fighting for, what we should not be, what they should be fighting for, what they should not be fighting for, and ultimately, and I believe it was Amy Klobuchar who was actually the first person in her opening statements to bring up the very important point of, to the Democrats, defeating Donald Trump. Alan, we'll start with you, and then we'll go around the room here.
Well, you know, I think I can only sum it all up by saying what you said, and what you said is right. I was struck by the relationship between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I thought it showed a great deal. You know, when you add up their numbers together, their numbers are greater as progressives than Joe Biden's. However, that's not the way the system works. It's not preferential voting. And I have to say, I listened to the Times reports, the NPR reports, and at great length. I thought that they all conducted themselves rather well. I don't think there was a breakout moment for anybody. I was extremely impressed with Williamson and the idea that she would bring up, the idea that there should be reparations for Black Americans. I found it to be very illuminating.
The Marianne Williamson thing is interesting, her performance, because after the first debate, it was people enjoyed having her here, but having her there, but the kind of, raise their eyebrows and maybe roll their eyes a little bit. And yesterday, she came out as a very strong, very interesting, I would say, alternative to the other candidates on that stage.
Do you really think so? I mean, she's interesting. She's strong.
I don't think she'll win.
She's compelling. Mm. But is she someone you would take seriously as a candidate?
Not really, but
look who's president of the United States.
Yeah, exactly. I do think she had
some
really,
of us don't take him that seriously.
I do think she had really interesting things to say, and she says them in ways that aren't, the usual political blabber. And I think that, she, in a way, she makes me wonder what it would have been like if Oprah or somebody like that had run, somebody who's kind of from outside the system. Because, they, in some ways, politicians, she was speaking to people in ways, I think, that the politicians sometimes don't,
But you have to be able
to. She's extremely
to
popular, too. I mean, she draws large crowds goes on
still.
Tour. She is a huge figure. I mean, I think the media has somewhat underestimated her a little bit. I think, I don't think she's going to be the nominee, not by a long shot. But, I've appreciated having her on the stage.
Well, and she's
well, that's
changed.
It. I'm sorry, Jen. I agree with that. I think it's good to have her on the stage because, as Alan mentioned, I mean, it's just it. The substance that she was bringing out was really important and interesting, and I don't know that it would have been there had she not been on the stage.
Mm-hmm. She's definitely a little bit underscored, but yet she's using a very, some of her language does seem a little like woo-woo, but
it does.
But I think at the other time she does have a way of explaining things and looking at an issue in a way and using a language that's not necessarily traditionally political, and I think that does make it people open their eyes and listen.
I take what she says seriously, but it doesn't seem to me that she would have any idea about how to make the process work.
No, I don't think she would.
And at the end of the day,
but I don't, that's probably true of a lot of the candidates.
Well, that may be true, but to me that's important. I want my president not just to have some goals that make sense to me. I want them to be able to be effective.
So who impressed you, Fran?
Well, it's kind of hard. I mean, there are a surprising number of parallels between that and The Bachelorette, which was down to two last night, in case anybody was watching that.
Did you get confused going back and forth?
Yeah. No, I stuck to the debates. You'll be happy to know.
Why does Mayor Pete have a rose?
There was no rose, yeah. I don't know. I mean, clearly Warren and Sanders are making a real case. They have some experience. They have a lot of experience. They know how to run a campaign. I really applaud Warren's thoughtfulness and her earnestness. Bernie's hanging in there, and a lot of his politics make a lot of sense to me. I started thinking about, who's my third choice, right? Mm-hmm. And I liked what Williamson says. I don't take her seriously as a candidate. I like Mayor Pete, but I it's hard for me to take him seriously as a candidate because of his lack of federal experience. I like Amy Klobuchar as well, and I think she's done a really nice job in the Senate, but somehow she doesn't seem to be able to
really
break through to that.
Yeah, there were long
really
stretches
top
where you could forget that she was there last night.
Yeah, and maybe she doesn't interrupt enough. I don't know, but she doesn't seem to be able to break through to that top group. But I think by experience and politics and general creds, to me, I think she should be in there.
She did have a great line somewhere in mid-debate where I believe there was a debate going on between, was it Delaney and Warren and maybe even Bernie, where they were talking about, health care. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, the problem here is that we're all fighting with each other and we can't take this valuable time and fight with each other. We have to talk about as a party how we're different. And and it was a good applause line, and I think it was a good reset, too, as to, oh, yeah, this is, I mean, there's winning that debate last night, and then there's the long, looking at the long road.
But there is a real debate happening in the party, and I think it's an important one. I mean, one of the things that was great about last night's debate was that there were differences and there were disagreements, and there's, you know, there's clearly a progressive wing, who I thought, you know, Warren really represented well. I thought in a lot of respects she kind of stole Bernie's thunder.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she had a lot of the same positions but expressed them better and wasn't quite so angry.
What'd you say, Alan?
So, I was just going to say Bernie had the best line, of course.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
I wrote the damn bill.
Yeah, I didn't think that was that great, actually. I don't know. And I thought he got a little testy there.
Well, that's why
I think Elizabeth Warren kind of expressing the same positions but expressing them better. I think that her demeanor was a lot better than I think his shtick gets old for a lot of people.
The challenge is definitely
He's still beating her.
I know. I wonder if last night's debate will change that at all.
The challenge of the debate is to be heard, you know.
Right.
Even if two candidates are saying the same thing, who's going to be heard more? And if you have that entertaining line of, you know, I wrote the damn bill, of course, like, you know, there are surely people at home and definitely on Twitter, you know, cheering and being like, yeah. And so I am curious who will, you know, what will be remembered from last night and what will be eclipsed tonight by anything that is said. Because again, we're going to expect to hear a lot of similar things. I do wonder whether the topics will dive into the same issues. I think there's a lot of things that were still left off of the table in terms of discussion that we saw in even previous debates. We heard more about the racial remarks, but we didn't hear more about actual issues of segregation. We heard nothing about higher ed. As an education reporter, I'm like, there are some really hefty proposals out there. And then I think it is a kitchen table issue. But I think it was also interesting to see the Democrats return to the healthcare debate as well.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that last night was particularly about this awareness of electability and that, you know, at the end of the day, the Democrats are really concerned. I mean, there's differences between the candidates, but the big issue is, you know, who is the most electable. And I agree with Chris. I think, you know, this kind of consistent grumpiness from Bernie, you know, I would rather hear the same ideas from Elizabeth Warren, who backs them up with evidence and makes them sound like they make sense and that kind of thing.
I would also say that, and I mean, one of the things about Elizabeth Warren, if someone was looking back, if we compare this probably unfairly to a team getting ready for a football game, if you look back at the tape and looked at the reels and she learned from her mistakes of the last debate, she seemed really to have much improved as honing
really,
her
she's
lines.
She's a really good debater.
She's a very good debater and very good. And I think she really had her. I mean, she really brought her A game, and I thought it was very impressive.
I was going to say, what did you all learn from the audience? I mean, you know, it's interesting. The moderates, it was almost as if somebody took a wet blanket every time they spoke, and when the progressives offered one of those lines, there was huge cheering. Do you think that the audience was representative of the Democratic Party as a whole, or do you think it was a loaded audience?
That's a great question.
It's an interesting question. Yeah.
I think in some ways it represents, I mean, the energy is definitely on the progressive side, the real, real enthusiasm. On the other hand, there are probably more moderates, you know, but they're not showing up for something like that.
Maybe they'll be there tonight.
Maybe they will. Maybe they're all Biden fans. Yeah. But you know, it was interesting to see some of these people you haven't heard a lot about, like Delaney and Tim Ryan, kind of playing the Biden role, playing the moderate role, and I think that's where there was a lot of substance. You know, them criticizing some of the grander plans that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren
now,
have.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So the next debate is in Houston in September, and that will be a much smaller debate with only half the candidates, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so there's going to be a winnowing down here very soon. Mm-hmm.
What's the algorithm? Do you know?
It's polling and
130,000 donations, I think, something like that.
Yes. Yeah. And okay. So, and I think it goes up until the end of this cycle of after these debates of what result they have after this. Mm-hmm. And then that will put them into the full next one.
I want to take some issue with my very good friend and a man I much admire, Chris, because I truly don't think that Biden can be thrown in with those other characters that we saw last night. I think Biden, it has many progressive elements to him. And to sort of say that
point.
He, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty...
Well, that is a good point.
We have 30 seconds, but go ahead.
You know, but I do think that he isn't necessarily running as it, but people see him as the moderate in the race. And I, you know, the characters last night, I think some of them have progressive elements too. I mean, I think Delaney was the one who said repeatedly, I am a progressive, or maybe I'm thinking of somebody. It's easy to start confusing.
Maybe think of Andrew.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, we have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll have letters, and we'll talk much more about this. We welcome your input, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We're talking about We're talking about debate night one, and of course night two on CNN tonight at 8 o'clock. How long did that thing go?
It was very long.
It was like 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
right?
Longer than 2 hours.
I mean, they didn't end it at 10. It just kept going. And
I started Googling what time does debate end.
Me too. I thought
I wanted to make sure it didn't go until midnight.
I was waiting to like send out because normally I'll send the group here an email and you know I was waiting for sort of a finalization and I kept waiting.
Yeah.
All right. We have a lot of letters. And Alan Chartok is here, Jen Smith, Fran Berman, and Chris Churchill. And we welcome your letters. Peter writes, as a lifelong Democrat, I really can't abide these so-called moderate candidates who think they can scare me into voting for them so they can abandon everything the party has stood for and offer the voters a version of Republican light. Let's stand on our principles and let's fight to win. Please interrupt if you want to say something. John says, have we forgotten Trump so fast? He got into the race to promote himself and his brand, and look where it's gotten us. Williamson is in it for the same reason. Promoter brand and the grift. We shouldn't make the same mistake twice.
Well, by the way, I think that's true, and I don't think we are going to make that mistake. But it's the analysis is correct. I mean, here's a woman who makes her living going around and giving speeches, right? From what I understand, and
you know, and
you run for president, why not? There's a whole history of comedians
well,
and
others. Why single her out? I mean, all of the candidates are, a lot of the candidates you are not going to win and are in it simply to build their brand. I mean, that's certainly true of Kirsten Gillibrand, mm-hmm. right? That's certainly true of
Beto.
That's true of a lot of them.
Well, except that those guys are not. They're politicians.
Well, so what? They still have a brand. Why should we give politicians a break that we don't give to all?
Alan wasn't quite through yet, Chris.
I happen to think people who write books and write for a living are quite important.
Yeah, no. But the point really is that I was just saying, you know, this is an obvious. And remember when you guys aren't old enough, but do you remember when Pat Paulson ran
Pat
for
Paulson
president?
Yeah.
Smother Brothers Comedy Hour.
So that. You know, all I was saying is it makes perfect sense for her to be doing this. That's
Stephen Colbert ran too.
Right. So did Dave Barry. But I mean, this is a serious candidacy, and she's on that debate stage. She's getting money. She is not polling high, but she is polling. So I mean, she got on that. There were candidates that did not make that debate stage, and she was one of them.
Sometimes you get interesting ideas from people who are from kind of outside the system. That's certainly been true of Andrew Yang, who, mm-hmm. by the way, I mean, and if you look at the donations, is doing really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? The other thing, too, is that one of the names that we have not spoken about at all until just one moment ago is Beto O'Rourke. Here was a guy who was thought to be really one of the front runners.
But he was awful. Mm-hmm. I think he's just awful.
And he did not shine the first time. He didn't shine last night. And you wonder whether they're going to send him back to Texas and
It's like sending him back to the minors until he gets ready for the majors. That doesn't mean he'll never be ready for the majors. He's just not ready now.
He just needs
to be in the minors for a while.
The part where he made it sound like he won that race in Texas against Ted Cruz.
I can't believe I just made a baseball analogy. I would like you but all I, to acknowledge
I
think that.
I was impressed, Fran. I like it. Yeah. Good for you.
That also holds true. I mean, your analogy does kind of hold true for a lot of these candidates. If you look at just age and career, it's, you know, some of them are really mid-career politicians that have a long way to go. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see any of these folks back in future years. But I think now they're trying to get the you know, notoriety of the person who pushes Trump out of office.
And it seems, I mean, Beto O'Rourke was riding a wave after the Texas race, and everybody was pushing him to get in, and then he made that bizarre comment in Rolling Stone of like, yeah, that sounds fun, I'll do that.
Beto.
Yeah. But then Mayor Pete came along took a lot of that, stole a lot of the thunder.
Mayor Pete is a much more, you know, in my opinion, kind of a serious candidate in the sense that, you know, he knows what he stands for. He has a tiny bit of experience in South Bend, Indiana, you know, but he doesn't have federal experience.
Yeah, but he's brilliant.
Yeah, but he has executive experience, and I think that's actually pretty important. I mean, so I know it's a
brilliant.
Small
He's also
small
a brilliant,
city.
And I agree with Alan. I mean, he's also a wonderful orator. I mean, he's very compelling
to listen
to.
I see a great trajectory for him. I just don't think his next step is president.
Well, Joshua writes in and says, one of the highlights of the debate for me is when Mayor Pete spoke to Republicans and said they will be forever remembered by standing with this racist president. That was a very strong moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was true and important.
It was phenomenal, and I certainly hope a lot of our local Republican congresswomen, whoever that might be, were listening to
anyone
to him
in
about
mine,
that.
Alan?
No. Their name rhymes with Felice. Bill in Kinderhook says, in last night's debate, Senator Warren's rebuke of Congressman Delaney's fairy tale comment was reminiscent of another progressive senator from the Northeast who said, some men see things as they are and ask why. I dream of things that never were and ask why not. If America is so exceptional, then why can't we provide all of our citizens with a clean, safe environment, equal access to education, and universal health care that they can afford? Well, I don't know.
Because society is messy.
Well, yes. No, because the powerful rule, and because you know, and because they oppress others, you know, we run in cycles, and we know which cycle we're in right now. And I think we can hope that the progressive elements in the Democratic Party say what was just said.
But I hope for the same things too.
Ed writes, we all do.
Yeah,
right?
How can you disagree?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ed says, say what you want about Marianne Williamson and her lack of governing experience, still infinitely better than Trump. All right.
Okay, but.
Well, I mean, you could say
dare
that.
Dare I say that that's kind of a low bar?
I think you dare say that, and you did say that, so that's fine.
Except that the Trump is the president. And I think we always forget that.
That's a higher bar, yes.
And somehow he got there. And somehow the New York Times and others are saying he's going to get there again, or that there's a good chance he's going to get there again. So I don't think we can dismiss him as a clown because, you know, you could dismiss Mussolini, you could dismiss other people, but, you know, he's there. And whatever it takes to get there, he got there.
And by the way, for the math fans for the non-math fans who may or may not know that there are many orders of infinity, there are some infinities that are bigger than another. He's talking about a really, really, really big order of infinity and not just the basic order of infinity.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'll give you one nerdy example. If you look at all the integers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that's one kind of infinity because there's a huge amount of them. If you look at all of the decimals, 0.0012, you know, whatever, there are more of them than the integers.
I still
so
don't
the
get
odds.
It.
So you're talking about the odds. Yeah, the is odds that what we're talking about?
No, I'm talking about all of the integers.
But what does this have to do with the debate? I'm sorry, that's what I'm missing.
Well, he said it was infinitely better than Trump.
And I gotcha.
I was claiming that it was a really, really big order of infinity, so what was that not word? Just the basics.
What was that word? Integers?
Integer.
I was lost too, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you guys.
Which makes great coffee cake, I think. All right. Rick says, good morning, panel. I found the debate insightful, though I was very frustrated by the moderator's desperation to get the gotcha moment, like when they're asking if you're going to raise taxes to provide health care, when both Warren and Bernie explained very clearly that Americans will actually save money by not paying deductibles and extra fees. That kind of journalism is one of the problems with our country. That being said, it is the progressives that will motivate the biggest turnout. And I believe that all Democrats will vote for whomever runs against Trump, but the progressives will add the whipped cream to the pie, and that's how we're going to win.
Well said. Well,
yeah, that's very nice, except that it isn't the way that it works. Half the country doesn't vote, and a good deal of that half is made up of Democrats who don't vote. And if anybody can explain to me why they don't vote, that's a very important discussion.
Well, I don't think it's journalistically irresponsible, though, to ask how you're going to pay for things.
I don't either.
Bernie, the main criticism, you heard this from from Delaney and some of the others, the main criticism of their laundry list of great things, but how do you pay for all that? It, it may be true that you don't need to raise taxes for Medicare for all, but what about if you throw in college tuition for all or loan forgiveness? I mean, at some point, the money has to come from somewhere.
If they talked about that, and I think that's the context that's missing, again, from a lot of these debates. And I mean, it's the nature of a debate, right? Like, you can't have these big picture, you know, answers that are asking to fix decades or centuries of issues.
And to be
issues.
Clear, you yeah. will need to raise middle class taxes for Medicare for all. Mm-hmm. The debate is whether or not people end up paying more than they're already paying for their deductible. Mm-hmm.
Well,
they still
was...
will need to raise their taxes.
Hey, Chris, can you remind me about how much it costs to build a nuclear submarine? In other words,
ask Fran. She may know.
Yeah. How many integers?
Call a friend.
How many integers? Infinity. Infinity is how much it costs.
Yeah, that's a big infinity.
How many integers in that?
All right. What,
I take your point that there's money to be cut in other areas, but at some point you will need to. The totals that they're talking about are huge. I don't think you can get it all from the defense budget.
I think the bottom line, though, is everyone in this country will have to pay something for the resources that
but
we're
now,
demanding
Warren
and asking.
Warren has, unequal tax plan where the very rich get taxed more, right? And, I mean, so she is talking about ways
right,
to
but
pay
she's
it.
Not
you
raising as much,
those are
she's
good
not
enough.
Raising as much as she's as yeah. she's proposing to spend.
Yeah, yeah.
To
but at least point, she's talking about ways to pay.
To the point of Rick's letter, and Chris started out with this, I agree, though, that Rick was blaming the moderators. Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say that there is a fracture within the party itself
right,
over
it
this issue, and it does have to be worked out mm-hmm. amongst the party members as to
and it goes back to
what
one of the other letter writers said, which is, it's ultimately about winning. And the debate is a moderate more likely to win, especially, or is a progressive more likely to win? And I think, that was the subtext of the debate, and I think that's partly why it was interesting television.
And I also think, going into debate, you can't just presume, you have to expect that anything could be put on the table in terms of questioning. And,
right.
It's a fair question.
It absolutely
How do you pay for this grand proposal mm-hmm. that you have? It's a fair question.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you just said, Chris. Is a moderate more likely to win?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. You could argue it both ways. You could argue that a progressive brings out the enthusiasm and brings out people who might not otherwise vote. You could also argue that a progressive scares a lot of people in the middle and will lose some of the states that the upper Midwest where the election will probably be decided.
The purple states.
Yeah. And I think what you've seen too is like different layers of those definitions. You've seen different kinds of people, very different kinds of people who call themselves moderates or who call themselves progressives. They might have a few fundamentals, but it's still hard to compare and really make a judgment on
Let's
that.
Take
so, Alan.
Oh, go ahead.
Oops. I was curious. Please. Alan, so you were right. Half the country didn't vote. And not all of them were children and felons. So what do you think will get out the vote this time, what do you think the Democrats can do to really rustle that up?
Answer, well, and then we'll take a break.
Well, very quickly, I think Barack Obama had whatever it would take to get people to come out. It was, of course, that he was of color, but I think it was much more than that. I think the man really represented hope for so many people. So that's what it's going to take, and you got to believe in him.
We have more letters. Many more people want to talk about this, and we will continue our conversation after a short break. Fran, you were right. It's Snarky Puppy we're playing. Congratulations. You won. Snarky Puppy. Our playlist is online, wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, we have more letters. This one's for you, Alan, from Russ. Uh-oh. Why did Alan refer to the candidates in last night's debate as characters?
Oh.
I don't know. I think I think they are all characters.
Well, they all sort of are playing a role. That's one way of looking at it, right?
Yeah. Well, I think they are characters. That's all.
Yeah, they're characters.
I have no apologies to make.
No, I don't think so either. We're all in this. We're all characters in this great drama of life, aren't we?
Yeah.
Whoa. Bob says Medicare. What do you mull that over, Alan? Bob says Medicare for all and the destruction of the private insurance industry that currently covers 150 million Americans is a losing issue. However, morally right it may be, it will be too easy for the GOP to demonize the government takeover of healthcare, just like it did with Obamacare. If the Democratic candidates embraced that position, Trump will win.
So it's interesting. I was trying to deconstruct this whole insurance issue for my own mind, and I'm still not sure where I am about it. But what's our big objections? Our big objections is it keeps people from getting the health care they need, and they make huge profits. And I was wondering if you could kind of remake that in a way so that, you know, insurance provides whatever gaps there might be. And for some of these plans, there are some gaps without making huge profits and without preventing people from getting the health care they need.
And remember, friend, this is one of the most important lobby groups in America, perhaps the most in terms of the money that they spend. They are not giving up without a fight. That's for sure. That's a huge part of this.
Well, and most of the so-called moderates on the stage are for a public option, right? So they are for giving people they're just arguing that instead of scrapping private insurance altogether, let people choose which one they want to go into. And I think the argument that, you know, if you start talking about scrapping private insurance, for whatever flaws the industry may have, it does employ a lot of people. It employs millions of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's going to scare those people. It's going to scare many of the people who are on Medicare. Supplement that with private insurance.
Right.
Are you going to scare them into? I mean, are they going to worry that they're going to lose the things that they do have?
Well,
you know, people don't want things taken away, and nothing makes people feel more insecure than when people start talking about changing their health
insurance. And there's a reality of the whole healthcare system in the shape that it's in itself, right? You know, you have people who still can't get into see quality primary care physicians and specialists. We have a huge retirement issue that's happening in that industry, and just access. There are healthcare deserts out there in our nation. And I think when you think of insurance, and people don't like any kind of changes to their healthcare unless it's guaranteed that they're going to get improved care. I mean, if you look at all the research and what people want in healthcare and want health insurance to cover, it's to see someone who's going to give them the time of day and not just 10 minutes in a doctor's appointment.
I think it was Delaney, was making the point that you're going to make those healthcare deserts worse because small hospitals may close, you know, if they are paid at the Medicare reimbursement rate.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another issue, and that's how we train our physicians, how we pay for those that training. Mm-hmm. So this is not a simple issue. It's going to have to take a transformation of the whole deal.
I think this notion that you would have a number of options, sorry, Jen, and that the market will sort of lean towards what works for the public good in some sense.
But I think you have to.
It's interesting.
You have to, you know, make a compelling argument by linking the narrative too, again, of coverage and care. I mean, look again at some of the stories that came out about VA healthcare, and I think that's that's still ingrained in public memory of this was a government healthcare system and it failed.
Right. I want to,
before we go to a break at the top of the hour, let us not forget there is round two of this debate tonight. The 10 candidates on the stage will be Michael Bennett.
It'll take 10 minutes just to...
Mike, I know. This will bring us right up to the top right now. Night two is tonight in Detroit. Michael Bennett, Kirsten Gillibrand, Julian Castro, Cory Booker, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Andrew Yang, Tulsi Gabbard, Jay Inslee, and Bill de Blasio. The one thing that seems to come out of this is the rematch between Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and that was one of the most dramatic moments of the first debate, and how the two will spar tonight.
I'd keep my eye on Cory Booker, too, because I think he's someone who could kind of emerge in kind of that Delaney Ryan lane that we saw last night. Someone who could emerge as kind of a Biden replacement if Biden continues to falter. I mean, Cory Booker is generally a centrist relative to the other candidates. Or
I don't know that he's faltering, Chris. You know, the numbers are quite clear that he's doing very well.
He is doing very well, but he looked terrible in that last debate. And if that continues to happen, the numbers will crumble. He's got to get better. He's got to be sharper.
He's just got to be Amy Klobuchar. Yeah.
Okay, I agree. We have to keep our eye on Biden.
He needs to break out of the Amy Klobuchar lane.
Well, the other thing too, of course, is that, you know, we mentioned this earlier, but who makes it to the next debate? And on tonight's stage, you have Michael Bennett of Colorado, Kirsten Gillibrand, of course, of New York, Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, Jay Inslee of Washington, and Mayor Bill de Blasio of New York. They face the very real possibility of missing the polling and the donor thresholds to make the debate stage in September in Houston.
Yeah.
So it is going to be very important for them to do well if that is going to change.
Kirsten Gillibrand just hasn't caught fire in any way.
Alan?
Do you think? What do you think, Alan?
It's worse than that.
Shut my mouth.
Uh-oh.
Just shut my mouth.
I'll let Chris go. You said failed.
No, she's been, I mean, I think she's probably been the most disappointing of all the candidates, considering that she entered with a fairly significant amount of name recognition and it's just gone nowhere. I mean, she's polling at 0%. It's hard to do. You know, go ahead, Alan.
I've asked Cuomo about that a lot, and he keeps saying, I have nothing to say.
Yeah.
So you're going to take that tactic, I assume.
I have no idea.
But
I have
no
idea
what
she's doing there. I really don't.
What leads to such a rapid sort of turnaround?
Well, she's done very well in her life. Let's face it. She's a United States senator. She won by an overwhelming number of votes in the last time she was out. Hope springs eternal.
But, you know, it's funny because Chris mentions this. You have to try hard to get 0%. I mean, she's polling the same numbers as Marianne Williamson. So you do have to want...
Below Andrew Yang.
Yeah, I mean, it is, given that the name recognition... that there hasn't been a little more spark.
Yeah, I don't know why she's running. I don't know what her rationale is. And I think, you know, I wrote a column on Tuesday about some remarks she made on Friday about how there are other Democratic candidates who don't think women should work, which was probably a shot at Elizabeth Warren, who wrote a book called The Two-Income Trap. And it's just a totally dishonest shot. It's disingenuous. And I think there's a sense that she just is not... She's not really who she says she is. You know, she's I don't know what she believes.
She's an identity crisis.
Yeah.
Well,
what happens to her career after this?
I mean, the only thing I know about her is that she's the only thing I know about her is that she's super supportive of women. But I don't know what the rest of her platform is. And, you know, that's an important issue to me. I care about it. It's not the only issue.
You also can't mention her name anywhere in social media without getting, you know, 300 Al Franken replies.
Mm.
There is still a considerable amount of anger about that.
That's from Democrats.
Right.
She's the woman who shot Liberty Valance.
Well, and all of this comes, too, as
if you get the reference.
I get the reference.
Yeah.
I also like there's also this the timing of this comes with the New Yorker profile of Al Franken and you know, some of the questions as to whether the substantiation of the allegations against him. And I don't know if that, I mean, her campaign was deeply damaged prior to that. But it can't help as you try to make this next step and get away from that argument.
Mm-hmm. It is extraordinary. It really is.
All right. I have just been handed a sheath paper. I have a good. What do they call that?
Stack.
Stack. Thank you, Jen. Yeah, it's a stack.
Stack.
That's what it is.
Fancy words.
Yeah, that's right. I was looking for another word, but that's fine. I'll go with stack. So we have a lot of letters to get to. We'll do that, and we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Chris Churchill, Fran Berman, Jen Smith, and Alan Chartok. We welcome your letters, and man, do we have a lot of them. So let's get to it. It seems like this is what everybody wants to talk about, so we'll do it. All right, here we go. Robert says, Marianne Williamson is on the debate stage because she embraces language and ideas that resonate with an electorate desperate for spiritual sustenance and unabashed talk of morality. Her millions of followers love her for that. Since Reagan, the right has hijacked people of faith, and the left has not been able to adequately fill that space. Her message of love and connectivity is ridiculed, but it is nevertheless of dire importance. She will not get the nom, a nation. But whoever does will very likely incorporate some of her platform. That from Robert in Phoenicia. Jack says, the point that Marianne Williamson has no government experience seems to be blown off since we now have Trump. While I agree that anything is possible these days, we do not need another president that does not know what they're doing, even if they should happen to be more civilized than Trump.
Thank you.
Bernie. This letter's about Bernie from Brucey. Last night I was trying to imagine Bernie giving, for example, an inaugural speech or a State of the Union, and my imagination failed. It's the exhausting volume. Does he have a presidential mode?
He has a grumpy mode.
I don't know if you need a presidential mode anymore. Is that a thing?
Yeah,
Alan says, Fran says Bernie Sanders is hanging in there. Sanders' poll numbers is number two in most polls, and in many polls, the best candidate to beat Trump. Why would you marginalize his candidacy? Mayor Pete is below 10% in most polls, and Amy Klobuchar is less than 5%. Why would you give them more legitimacy than Bernie Sanders?
Oh. Well, thanks for the letter. And now, you know, I'm not looking at the polls. I'm thinking about how am I reacting as a voter to what they are saying to me and how I think they'll be president. So, no, I'm not looking at the polls. And I am trying to evaluate them on different criteria. And I like the things that... I like Amy Klobuchar's experience. I like some of the things she stood up for in Congress, including information technology legislation. Let's add that. I don't think she's going to break into the top. I like Mayor Pete. He inspires me. I don't think he has enough federal experience. I hope he gets lots of it and then runs. Bernie, I don't know. I like his politics and I like his ideas. For me, it's not the time for him. I would rather see Elizabeth Warren run ideas.
Yeah. In strong contrast,
just my opinion. But thank you for the letter.
In strong contrast to the last letter, here comes Leslie's letter, who says Bernie was/is a loud, angry, broken record with a pie in the sky idea, with no sound way to pay for it. He attracts young, impressionable voters with promises he will never be able to keep. I hear nothing new from him, and fear he does more harm than good, even being in the race. He hurt Hillary in 2016, and I fear his egomaniacal ways will make a repeat performance. That's the contrary.
We should have
to the
a
last
listener
letter.
like mud wrestling here.
Wow. No, but Bernie does have some new ideas. I mean, there is a major new idea on the table out of all of this, and that is some kind of health care reform. And we are going to get it. And Bernie is the guy who, quote, wrote the damn bill. So the fact of the matter is, he really has brought something to the table. I have to say that some of the other things that the writer wrote about Bernie are true. Go figure out which ones.
Well, I will. And now Chris writes and says, good point, Alan. A candidate who gives people hope has to be nominated. Sanders is that candidate and has been. Now the question for you, Alan. But will the DNC allow him to be the candidate?
I don't, you know, I am not a great believer in conspiracy theory. I don't think the DNC is gonna call this. I think it's going to be the voters that decide this. And I know that there's a sense that the DNC is loaded and all the rest. I don't believe it. I think somebody's going to emerge from this. I happen to know who I think will emerge from it, but I may be wrong.
So how do you all feel about this question from our statement from Bob, who says, Elizabeth Warren is 70, Bernie Sanders is 77, both too old. Pete Buttigieg is 37. The audiovisual contrast last night was stark. Time for a new generation.
I don't buy the too old thing. I don't know. It just doesn't. I mean, you could just argue, you could say Mayor Pete's too young. You know, and I don't know. Elizabeth Warren doesn't strike me as seeming old when she's up there speaking. She seems energetic and has a lot of...
How old is RBG?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's a great point.
RBG.
Damn well said.
You know, I don't know. It just doesn't... I don't believe the generational, and I'm closer to Mayor Pete's age than Elizabeth Warren's. At least, So you know, I should be susceptible to that generational argument, but for me, it just doesn't.
I don't think it's a generation of chronology. I think it's a generation of thought, and I think you want somebody who can kind of look ahead and be grounded in today's reality as it existed and not, 1950s or 1980s or 1990s or whatever. And to me, I don't worry so much about the age of this current set of candidates. I worry about how they're thinking.
So just to go back to that letter about the polls, the Real Clear Politics average has Biden at 24%, Elizabeth Warren at 18%, and Bernie Sanders at 16%. So he has dropped off a bit. He is flagging, I think, at least, in the poll numbers.
And in the money.
He's number two.
I mean, not a lot.
Right?
Number three. And to go back to Alan's point earlier, if you put the Warren and Sanders vote together, you have a real front runner. So you have to wonder if maybe at some point one of them has to go and endorse the other, or if they start attacking each other, which was a lot of people thought might happen last night. But
so I had this fleeting moment where I thought, they're going for being the ticket together because they really avoided attacking each other. They supported each other at various times. It was like it was about the point of view. It wasn't about the.
I think it was a fleeting moment. Ted Cruz wouldn't attack Trump, and then suddenly he did attack Trump.
And it came off skeevy.
They play those they try to eventually. If they're serious about winning, eventually they're going to have to try to differentiate each other.
That's true.
Well, it's amazing how many people don't get out right now and say, gee, I have no business being here. I'm not going to win. They don't do that. They don't tell their cousins and their mothers and their aunts and uncles that they're going to get out, even though they get no percent in the race. And now you're saying that somebody who's really at the top there, Bernie or Elizabeth, are likely to do that. I don't see.
Yeah. Well, think about the New Hampshire primary. I mean, they're both from neighboring states.
Yeah.
If you don't win there, I think that your rationale for staying in the race will be pretty greatly diminished.
Yes.
I think you could expect both of them to stay in at least through there.
Teresa writes, I'm so tired if this is how we're going to pay for it argument. I am so tired of this how are we going to pay for it argument, I think is what it's supposed to say. How does every other advanced country in the world do it and with better outcomes than we have? This on healthcare, of course. It's a question of priorities, and nothing is really more important than your own or your loved one's health. If politicians stopped taking money from the healthcare industry, things would change very quickly, says Teresa.
Very interesting. Yes. Other countries do it. It's less expensive. It's better quality. It hits more of the population. It's a worked example.
Here you go, Chris. Mr. Churchill said it's a fair question to ask how we are going to pay for programs. It isn't. We never asked that of wars. We've had two wars with tax cuts at the time. We do not pay for anything with taxes. Modern money theory shows that we pay for things by paying for them through the Treasury. Look it up.
I think he should have asked how you're going to pay for the wars. I think that was a major mistake not to. And I think if you look at how much money was spent on those wars and what could have been done with that money, I think the cost of those should have been a much bigger part of the discussion. To say that just because we made a mistake there that we should continue to make that mistake going forward, I think is just not a good argument.
Neil takes us to task and says, geez, people, Have you ever been to Wisconsin or Iowa or Arizona or North Carolina? New York is not even relevant in the presidential election. Liz is my senator and I love her dearly, but nominate her or Bernie and watch the Democrats lose in the only five or six states that matter in the Electoral College, which I think is a point made.
No, absolutely.
Electability. Yeah. That's the electability.
Christine says, Alan is underestimating the young voters. First-time voters were all born since Columbine. They have grown up with Sandy Hook. Classmates of student victims can vote in 2024, as well as Marjorie Stoneman. They have a passion that hasn't been seen since the 1960s.
I hope so. I really hope that's true. I really want to see those guys come out and come out strong.
But we heard a similar argument that the kids after 9/11 were going to come out and vote in 2016, and we didn't see that either.
I still hope. Yeah,
but then
I
we also hit a recession not too far after that, too.
I think everybody should vote. I really do.
Well, you're exactly right. And you're exactly right about that. And foo-foo-ness aside, everybody should everybody should vote. Yes, everybody should vote. Very nice. Nevertheless, they haven't voted in the past. And as a college professor, I know you are, and I know I am, and I remember talking to my students again and again and again and saying, get out and vote, and they did not. Now, I hope you're right. I really do. But I don't know that it's going to happen.
Well, I was talking about something I hope for, and whether I'm a college professor or, God forbid, a rock star, you know, I can still hope that.
Yeah, well, good,
and
good.
And I do hope that. But, I mean, that's why I was asking you before, what can we do to get the numbers up? You know, what strategies really work? I mean, yeah, you can tell people to vote, but does that doesn't necessarily mean that you get different numbers.
And you can point out what's in it for them, because I think that's huge. Yeah. I mean, you know, just look at what the 26th, the idea of being on your parents' health insurance till you're 26, that became a huge issue because it was so relevant to so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I didn't do this one. Elias says, sorry, I lost my, see which letter actually was on here. Elias says, calling moderate Democrats Republican light shows a massive disconnect with the reality of today's Republican Party and the bastions of conservatism that exist in America. I found the so-called moderate policies to be intelligent, positive programs, which could actually be adopted despite the certainty of vigorous opposition by Republicans. You need policies that you can sell to everyone, not just lefties like me. And then the last letter from Joe, who says, I understand that most Democrats feel their best shot at beating Trump is with a far-left candidate. As someone who until last year was a Republican, I think that a more moderate candidate has the best chance of beating Trump by winning over the independents and Republicans that have seen enough of Trump. The main goal is to get that man out of office, period. And that from Joanne.
To which I would comment, damn well written.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
All right, let's move on to other stuff. And let's see. I want to go to the Capital One story and the hack. We were talking about this yesterday, but how did it happen? In 2015, Capital One's chief information officer, Rob Alexander, promoted the steps the bank had taken to protect its financial data. In his keynote address at the Amazon Web Services conference, Alexander said Capital One had looked to AWS to meet customer demand, cut back on its data centers, and boost security, especially since, quote, the financial services industry attracts some of the worst cyber criminals. 4 years later, Capital One was ensnared in one of the largest ever hacks of a big financial institution, and in the end, its embrace of cloud services couldn't save roughly 100 million credit card applicants in the U.S. from having their data compromised. Fran Berman, you understand this. Tell us what this means.
This is a security lapse, and or you can just sum it up by someone saying, I know what's in your wallet. Let's not go there.
Yeah,
So there's sort of two pieces to think about. First of all, the cloud services are used for storage and some computing. They're available via Amazon. They have their own security issues, but that was not the problem here. A lot of big customers like Capital One put a special kind of app over it so they can process things more efficiently. Their app had a vulnerability in the firewall. So the firewall is what is supposed to keep hackers out. And so it's like having a hole in the dike. That's a little bit simplistic, but that's kind of what happened. And so, a hacker who used to work at Amazon found that vulnerability, got in, and stole about 100 million credit card applications. In those credit card applications, there were about 140,000 Social Security numbers, about 80,000 bank account numbers. It is not clear whether those are now available to others for sale on the web, but as any of you know, if somebody gets that information about you, they can do all kinds of damage, including taking your money, including taking your Social Security number, et cetera. So it's an interesting case, and it's a case that points out how important it is to be beefing up the security in all of these companies we go to. And it's a question that most of us don't ask. You know, if I'm going to get a credit card or I'm going to buy something from a commercial company online, it's typically we don't ask, what's your data privacy policy? How much security do you have? But these things are really what's making the internet the Wild West.
And it's Fran, I have a question for you. Do I have to worry?
Did you have a credit card or an account with
Capital One? I have a credit card, long-standing credit card, but I haven't applied for a credit card. Let's say if 100 million people, what are my statistical chances, even if they get my Social Security number, of having a problem?
If your Social Security number is out there on the web, it can be stolen. Right. And people can open up a Social Security account or change your address if you already have a Social Security account that you're drawing from. And they can get your Social Security. They can use it for all kinds of other things, opening up cards in your behalf and, taking money away. I believe that one of the articles, whether it was New York Times or Washington Post, gave a link for people to find out if they were, and I know Capital One has a website, and probably right. If you Google it, you can find it. Has a website so that they would you would be able to kind of figure out if you were one of the people in danger.
All right.
Yeah, I think the other thing with that, this is on the heels of the Experian breach and on the Mueller hearing earlier this week, which all talked about. This is what we need to know. People are interfering with our stuff, whether it's a hacker right. And our credit card systems, whether it's Russians and our election systems. And, what are we doing about that? And what are companies, now that they know that this happens, Capital One should be prepared and should be constantly monitoring these. And it's a lot. It's a lot since we've been collecting big data. We never really prepared ourselves to handle all the aftermath.
And they should know better. They've had security breaches in 2014 and 2017. And these breaches, it costs hundreds of millions of dollars for people to beef up their security.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to adjourn this meeting because I want to mention something that is very, very exciting that was embargoed until just now. So there's this really cool publication called Atlas Obscura, which I would say it's like a cool, people are going to get mad at me at this, but like sort of quirky, cool National Geographic-like site. And they have this contest which allows someone to go on their first real journey. And they announced just moments ago that the winner of this contest, which hundreds of thousands of people entered, and the winner gets to take a meaningful, life-changing trip, and that winner is Jen Smith.
You're kidding.
No.
Yes.
So this is really, really cool. So Jen,
that's fantastic.
Tell us what this means. This is amazing. I'm a huge Atlas Obscura fan. I have
Me
the
too.
Page a day calendar. They have really neat stuff. If anyone doesn't know about it, just go to Atlas Obscura and you can see it online. They have a great book. It's very popular. So they put out this call for contest of asking people, hey, do you want to go on this really cool journey? Mm-hmm. And you put in an application.
Yes.
So where are you going?
I will be going to India, which is for, I think many people, but not a lot of people maybe not know that I was born in India. I was born in Kolkata, and I was adopted. and raised in the beautiful Berkshires, but I have never been back to the place where I was born in my adult life. And so my proposal and along to going there was to have the opportunity, you know, they're a country too where there's a lot of changes happening right now, and not everyone's getting along. So when do you see people at their best? And it's when they're celebrating their heritage. And India has such a rich heritage, so many influences from different religions and beliefs and other outside visitors. And so I'm going to attempt to go to 12 different kinds of festivals within 90 days to really explore the
90 days?
Culture.
What is the Berkshire Eagle going to do without you?
She's still going to be filing stories.
Technology. Watching.
Yeah. Oh, it won't be the same.
You should see her. She has a smile a mile wide.
I'm just so incredibly thrilled for you.
Thank you. It is
amazing that you're doing this. So you'll be with us next week, and then you're gone.
Yes. But I will
hopefully give you a lot of time to pack.
Share some information about
for 3 months.
About two and a half. Yeah. So I'll be able to
share
my dispatches with everyone.
I think we'll keep in touch with Jen. We'll let people know. I do want to mention that if you put Atlas Obscura, OBSCURA, Atlas Obscura, Jen Smith with two N's, Jen Smith in your Google search, a beautiful article comes up of telling the whole story in it. Really,
and a beautiful picture.
A gorgeous picture of you and your mom, too,
yes,
which is really cool. So congratulations.
Thank you.
For this. What a wonderful achievement. Thanks to everybody this morning. We'll be back with more show after this.